The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
You're watching the ESPN Fantasy Football Marathon.
We are now 21 hours into our Fantasy Football Marathon, and nearly 1.66 million people have signed up to play Fantasy Football on the ESPN Fantasy app, and more fantasy to come throughout the show as we're going to talk about what Frank Reich said about his star running back. It might give me just the tiniest bit of pause about drafting him.
Look at them.
I am Field Gates.
Fellas.
Yeah, Swagoo looking crispy, as is our guy Damian Woody, who tells me that he went to Swagoo's barber here yesterday. Yeah. He is also extra fresh.
Swagoo has a Bristol barber?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you didn't know you're damn right I do.
Yeah.
You're damn right I do.
Yeah.
All you do is put a razor and do this, Shefty. I got to get this thing groomed.
And you do. You do that well, Swagoo.
He does it at top level. We also have, of course, Adam Schefter here. And Shefty, we're going to start with you because we have some breaking news running Jets quarterback Zach Wilson. What's the latest?
Still, he underwent surgery today in Los Angeles, and it went about as well as the Jets could hope. Dr. Neil Elitrosh repaired his torn meniscus, and the Jets initially had said it would be about 2 to 4 weeks. It sounds like it's going to be closer to that four-week timeline, maybe a little longer, because the Jets are going to be very careful with Zach Wilson and not bring him back until he's fully ready. And that means that right now, with the Jets playing the Baltimore Ravens in week one, I think Joe Flacco, the former Ravens quarterback, is in line to start against his former team with Zach Wilson on the mend. But today went as well as the Jets could have hoped.
Absolutely. And we know that Robert Saleh and the whole organization, they had talked about they feel good going into this whole situation as far as the surgery is concerned. And now I think they can exhale a little bit knowing that the surgery went well, that he'll be on the mend. And they pointed out that, listen, he's not going to get back on the field until he's 100% ready. Mm-hmm. So it'll be the Joe Flacco show. And I've been out there to the Jets training camp. Joe Flacco can still sling the ball around. Like, his arm is still lively at 37 years old. So I think the Jets feel pretty good about Joe Flacco filling in for Zach Wilson for as long as it needs be.
There you go, Woody. That's what I wanted you to get to. Like, you can take your time because you feel good about Joe Flacco. That's a great situation to be in for Joe Douglas and the New York Jets. But the one thing that hit my mind was also, man, he need these reps. Zach Wilson, I'm talking about. I just hope that he's able to continue to keep the football acumen going, because remember now, fellas, when he come back, it's live action for a guy that didn't see a lot of action last year. So hopefully during this rehab process, he can stay truly engaged. And I know it's easy. Like here's the thing, Woody, and everybody think, oh, he engaged, he in meeting rooms, he's doing. But when you're not playing, you have to actually put a little extra mental effort into preparing for these weeks like you're actually going to go out and play. And for a young guy, that can be something you need to learn over time. So I'm looking forward to seeing when he does step back on the field, how up to breast he is and how fast he can get going and start ascending. This is a huge year for Zach Wilson, fellas.
If Joe Flacco was a starter in week one, that would mean that we have Joe Flacco facing off against the Ravens. We would have Russell Wilson in week one off against the Seattle Seahawks.
Baker Mayfield against the Browns, maybe?
The Cleveland Browns. Week one is officially reunion week in the NFL. And
not good ones, though, Phil. Not good ones.
Well, hey,
These are divorces. You see your ex with a new man somewhere.
maybe the right word is the revenge tour in week one. Let's keep it in the AFC East and go from the Jets to the Patriots and the Panthers, as they are holding a joint practice today. Bill Belichick and Mac Jones out there working on the Patriots' new offense. And, of course, on the other side of the ball, we just told you about Baker Mayfield. He's getting plenty of important reps as he continues to compete with Sam Darnold for that starting quarterback job in Carolina. And we are going to head right out to Gillette Stadium, where we find our guy Mike Reese, of course, the intrepid Patriots reporter for us here at ESPN. And, Mike, I'm not sure if anybody's asked you about this for the past 6 months, but what is the latest in terms of how the Patriots are approaching their offensive coordinator situation?
Oh, Field, this has to be the only place in the NFL where reporters are watching the sideline as much as they're watching the field. Let me tell you what I saw in this morning's joint practice with the Panthers. Matt Patricia had the walkie-talkie, and it seems like he is still the primary voice in Mac Jones' helmet. But it really is interesting to watch more than Patricia, but also Bill Belichick. When they split the field for the first time, and it was the Patriots' offense against the Panthers' defense, and on the other field, the Patriots' defense was against the Panthers' offense, Bill Belichick was over with the Patriots' offense. So he's still a very big part of this, coaching up the offense. And just to give you a quick flavor of what happened today, two-minute offense was a chance for Mac Jones and that top unit to maybe get a little momentum going, had a couple big plays field to get it going, and then it fizzled out. That's reflective a little bit of where the offense is. Some good things, but still looking for that defining moment.
Well, Mike, I'm sure we'll keep you busy following this offensive coordinator story until week one, and then it'll be a whole different story when we find out what actually happens when the Patriots travel to Miami. Great stuff from Mike, as always. Looking forward to day two of joint practices tomorrow. Let's go back to the offensive coordinator situation, Shefty. What more can you add to the dynamic in play in New England?
Well, Mike is right. Where else have we debated who's calling plays or who's running the offense more than in New England? Yep. And while I have no doubt that they're going to miss Josh McDaniels, who's one of the top play callers in the league, the fact that the Patriots could draw as much scorn and criticism and skepticism as they have surprised me. Like, Bill Belichick knows a thing or two about football. So I think he knows what he's doing when he appoints Matt Patricia to call plays and he's involved in the offense. Is it going to be as good and as efficient as it would be if Josh McDaniels were running the offense? No. Josh McDaniels is one of the best in the league. But Bill Belichick has a pretty good sense about how football is played, about how offenses are run, about how defenses like to attack. And yes, I think there'll be some growing pains. But again, I will give that organization the benefit of the doubt.
Swagoo, it sounds like you feel a little bit differently about this, because how are you feeling about the possibility of Matt Patricia or Joe Judge calling plays in New England?
You see how Shefty phrased that? Because he know we about to have a damn fight. And I hope Woody on my side.
And I don't want to fight with a guy who's got his beard so neatly trimmed.
Now, here's the thing. And the reason why we do have pause is exactly what Shefty said about Bill Belichick. But ultimately, fellas, like, come on now, let's settle in and start thinking about this from a football perspective. They don't have an offensive coordinator. Like, to me, this is mind-boggling that this is not concerning for anybody. And we could call it whatever we want to, but both of these guys are auditioning to be the offensive play caller, if you're using to. Because all of our history teaches us about Bill Belichick, he likes knowns. He doesn't like things to be up in the air. He wants to know where he's going, where the team sits, and how he's going to move forward. And maybe they have that within the building. But if one of these guys have ascended, or if you plan on using two, why not just say that? Because, and look, you could tell me about game planning and other teams don't know what the hell you're going to do and it's going to give you an advantage. No, it ain't. Because I look at this conference that they're in, you can't have a middle-of-the-pack offense. And I'm not sure if the New England Patriots had a good offensive coordinator, because I don't consider Matt Patricia or Joe Judge, either one of them calling plays, to be good offensive coordinators right now, because we've never seen it. That's important. But outside of that, we're talking about Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson. We're talking about Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen within their division. And God help us, if Tua plays well, the New England Patriots might not make the playoffs. And we sitting here talking about trying to figure out who their offensive coordinator is going to be. This is not normal. This is not normal, and I don't want fans to ever think it's normal because it's Bill Belichick. Well, man, y'all get out of here with that.
Well, why should he have to say it? Like, it's not like Bill Belichick has ever said a whole lot about football strategy in the past. He doesn't owe that to anybody, and the players know what's going on.
You're exactly
right.
Why
does he have to say that?
You're exactly right, Shefty. But when you got two guys calling plays in one game, that probably can create a little bit of confusion within your own team, not knowing. Now, like I said, he may, inside those walls in that building, and Woody knows better than both of us because he's been there and been coached by Bill Belichick. Inside those walls, they may already know the plan and how they're going to move forward. But when you got a guy calling plays in the first half and the second half of a preseason game, that's going to cause a little bit of attention from the outside and the media to try to determine what are you doing with this offensive coordinator spot.
Let me tell y'all something.
Go ahead. Go ahead, big
fella. Let me tell y'all something.
Well, preach what it is, because you know.
The only reason we giving deference or we things are tampered down is because of Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
That's the only reason.
Right.
Let this happen to any other organization. All hell would break loose on the set.
Everywhere
else. When you have two guys that we're talking about could be potential play callers that's never called plays, and even when they were head coaches, they were disasters at their respective organizations. So I could really go off.
Go ahead.
Not going to go off because, Adam, I've been coached by Bill Belichick. I know his greatness. So I'm willing to give him a little time to kind of work through this whole thing.
Woody, hold on. Bring them up while I'm talking. I got a question to ask because everybody keeps saying this about Bill Belichick. Woody, you were one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL when you were in New England. Mm-hmm. Who was your quarterback?
Oh, come on. You know it was Tom.
Can you name some of the guys that was on the defensive side of the ball when you were in New England?
Absolutely. Willie McGinnis, Teddy Bruschi, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, Richard Seymour.
Okay.
I can keep going.
Thank you, Woody, for my point. In any other time, if you sitting there with Tom Brady as your quarterback, and you got 9 or 10 Hall of Famers on the other side of the ball, we can insulate you and we can play offense and we can take time to develop and come along. You got a second-year quarterback. And you don't know who you don't know what this defense is going to be for real this year. You just let the league leader in interceptions go to the Los Angeles Chargers. Listen. All hell breaking loose in Swaggoo, man, and y'all ain't gonna stop it from doing it.
Hey, listen, hold on, Swaggy. Like, don't think I'm not against you here. I'm just giving deference to Bill. That's the only reason all hell hasn't broken loose on the set right now. I can tell you that.
All right. Thank you for calming me down, Woody. Thank you for calming me down.
Here's the good news. We have 26 days until the NFL regular season, which means just 26 more days to dissect this conversation a million different ways as we have been doing for the past handful of months. Speaking of conversation to dissect, the Panthers have one surrounding their starting quarterback job, and that's where we head out now to get more information from our great Panthers reporter, David Newton, who, of course, is up there at Gillette Stadium for these joint practices. And, David, it sounded like another day where it was Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold kind of working as the co-starting quarterback. This joint practice is sort of a big opportunity for more reps against different competition. What did you see out of these two?
Yeah, it's not so much what I saw, it's what I didn't see. Ooh. I didn't see Baker Mayfield do anything to really separate from Sam Darnold, and I didn't see Sam Darnold do anything to really catch up with Baker Mayfield. And that's kind of the way it's been all camp. I think the difference is that Baker Mayfield has really grasped this offense quickly. He's taken command of it. But today, he was really rough out there. I mean, he started off in the drills where he was throwing one-on-one with the cornerback and the wide receiver. He was one out of his first six. He got into the two-minute drill. He was 3 for 10, I believe, and he got there at the end. He had a chance to get him to the end zone. He didn't do it. So Baker Mayfield is not perfect. He's far from that. But he also is probably better than Sam Darnold, and that's kind of what they're looking at right now. They just know what Sam Darnold can do because they had him last year, and he was 4-7. Baker Mayfield, they're trying to see as much as they can right now so they can learn as much as they can about him before they name him a starting quarterback.
Yeah, it seems like Baker Mayfield has a leg up here, at least will by the time this is all said and done. David Newton, thanks so much for the perspective. And let's turn to Shefty for more on this Panthers quarterback competition, which we think could wrap up as soon as this week.
Matt Rhule has said that neither quarterback has had an edge, and that's been the word within the organization. But I think people outside all have expected that Baker Mayfield is the guy that is the leader to be named the starting quarterback job, and that when opening day rolls around and Carolina's playing Cleveland, not that we needed one more storyline on opening day, but Baker Mayfield going up against Cleveland would be awfully appealing, and it certainly seems like that's within the realm of happening right now. Again, these two quarterbacks still are engaging in a competition. Panthers haven't given an edge to either one publicly. Matt Rhule said he wanted to wait until after August 18th. August 16th, so we're a few days away, Field.
Damian, as far as this conversation and the quarterback decision goes, is this really more about Sam Darnold and what we have seen last year, or Baker Mayfield and what he can bring to the table upside-wise in Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's... Man, I was ready to come with a real answer on this. Like, I was ready to, like, blow people away with all of this stuff. Baker Mayfield and why Baker Mayfield makes so much sense. And then my man in research, Henry, just gave me the stats. Since 2018, you want to know the two quarterbacks that's led, that's been the worst as far as turning the ball over?
Since 2018?
Since 2018.
Mayfield and Darnold.
There you go. So this is like, I'll be damned. Like,
I can save Henry the work.
You can save Henry the work right there. And it's just like, for me, obviously the quarterback is the guy that's handling the football the most. And you have two guys on the roster who, since they've come to the league, have been turnover machines.
How about
so
that? Wow.
That does not feel good.
In other words, Woody's ready to name Matt Corral the opening day starter.
Sounds like it. Well, let me ask Swaggoo then here. Hey, Swaggoo, is it more important who starts at quarterback or Christian McCaffrey being healthy and on the field for almost all 17 games this season?
It's Christian McCaffrey. Woody just told you, they trying to determine between the best or the worst, and that ain't a good place to be in the NFL. And listen, Christian McCaffrey will make it easier on both of these guys, but there you have it. This is the biggest question for the Carolina Panthers this year, because he really does change the dynamic of how defenses have to play you. Now, we saw Baker Mayfield play behind with the team where the run game was the strength of the offense. And he was able to function at a high level at times, but obviously in those high leverage situations is when Baker Mayfield started to waver. And then Sam Darnold, who broke my damn heart, y'all. I thought Sam Darnold was going to lead the Jets out of that Adam Gase situation and go to Carolina and start to ascend. And I know he didn't have Christian McCaffrey. He had some success early in his tenure as a quarterback, but then we start to see the ball go to the other team. Unfortunately for the Carolina Panthers, right now, you got to bank on your running back being available and playing the entire season, which has not happened in an extended period of time. I love Christian McCaffrey and what he brings, but God bless him, because he's going to have to be the catalyst for this offense. He's going to have to make everyone around him job easier, and that's the quarterbacks especially. And guys, listen, Matt Rhule is talking, and thank goodness they get to play and practice against New England Patriots, because they will show you defenses that'll be a little bit more tricky than most teams that you either play or practice against. But this is about Christian McCaffrey this year, because if we expect Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield to have a revival like a church tent in 140 degrees, it ain't happening. These guys are who they are by now. This league is honest. This league is very telling. Mm. And y'all go back and research for me how many guys we've seen play troublesome football the first 3 or 4 years of their career and then somehow magically turn around and become great players. Yeah. I don't know many of them.
It's a very short list, that much is for sure, Swaggoo. Since signing a 4-year, $64 million extension a couple of off seasons ago, Christian McCaffrey has played in just 10 out of 33 games for the Carolina Panthers. We'd love to see him back on the field much more this season. Hey, still to come here on NFL Live, we're talking Colts. Does their offense fly higher with Jonathan Taylor running the rock less? Hear what Damon has to say about that next. And speaking of running backs, Najee Harris said he would carry the ball 500 times this season if it meant the Steelers were winning games. But will he have to shoulder that kind of load? Marcus weighs in after the break.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're watching the ESPN Fantasy Football Marathon.
Stefania Bell here. Have you heard of the ESPN Fantasy app? Your portal to the best fantasy football experience on the planet? With the ESPN Fantasy app, you are in control. From customizing your leagues to inviting friends to running your draft, it's all in there in a simple, easy-to-use layout. During the season, use it to add and drop players, propose trades, and track your progress in real time from virtually anywhere. Fantasy becomes reality when you download the ESPN Fantasy app.
All right, time now for some read and react as we are back here on NFL Live, and we're going to get some fantasy-type intel in here, and we start with the Colts and the possible RB1, and by possible, I mean the definite RB1 going into this season. Here's Colts head coach Frank Reich about Jonathan Taylor's role for this season. Quote, the goal is not to lead the league in rushing. The goal is not to make Jonathan Taylor the MVP of the league. The goal is to win championships. He knows that, and we all know that. That's what we're all about. You don't see teams that have this ground-and-pound run game win championships. You just don't. Damian, does this deter you at all from taking Jonathan Taylor number one overall? You have the first pick in our draft tonight.
Listen, if I had some glasses, I would take them off right now.
Swagoo style.
Okay, yeah, Swagoo style. There's no
question. He doesn't want you to win a fantasy championship.
He doesn't want me to be great right now. He does. Frank does not want me to be great right now. I'm taking Jonathan Taylor tonight, number one.
Whoa. And you're not supposed to tip your picks.
But I'm doing it. I'm letting everyone know right now.
He's out the Orlando Magic.
I'm ignoring the noise, okay? I'm ignoring it.
I'm with you. I mean, what if his rushing goes down by like 150 yards this year? He'll still be by far the leading rusher in the NFL unless Derrick Henry decides to be. Well, Derrick Henry. Let's go to the Raiders. There have been big changes in Vegas, but Darren Waller is still a top 10 tight end while only having two touchdowns last season. How about this quote on the great Bustin' with the Boys podcast? Quote, there were a lot of times in the last couple of years where I felt like there wasn't a clear defined attack in the red zone or like a plan for me specifically. I was kind of like, what the bleep am I doing? Sometimes, but now I kind of feel like that's something that's in place with Josh, of course, McDaniels. For me, there's no reason why my big ass shouldn't be dominating in the red zone at all.
Okay.
Shefty, with the addition of Devontae Adams, who gets the red zone targets here in Las Vegas?
Well, that's the key there, Field. They add Devontae Adams, and so you have to figure that defenses will be shifting their defense and coverage to Devontae Adams, giving that much more wiggle room to a guy like Darren Waller. I know there's a lot of targets to feed in Vegas. Hunter Renfrow, Devontae Adams, Darren Waller, but Darren Waller should be a red zone force.
Looking forward to it. Let's go to Pittsburgh, where Najee Harris bursted onto the scene last season in terms of touches. He led the entire league. Here's what he had to say about his usage going forward.
I'll get 500. Listen, I didn't have an issue with it. You know what I mean? It was the media who had the issue with it. I told them every game, I was like, man, look, if this is the way to winning, I can carry the load. You know, I train to carry loads. You know what I mean? It's not something that I haven't done before. I did in college, high school, you know what I mean, NFL. Me to get that much carries, I was like, man, like, is we winning games? You know what I mean? It was a long streak where, you know, someone was saying, like, if I have 25 carries, then, you know, we're undefeated. You know what I mean? So if I get 500 carries, as long as we winning, it doesn't really matter.
Man, Swagoo, that's a lot. Does Najee Harris need 500 for the Steelers to win?
Man, I don't ever want to hear Najee Harris say that again. No, please, God, don't let him need 500 carries for the Pittsburgh Steelers to win. He had to carry the ball so much last year because we didn't know if Ben Roethlisberger on was going to show up to the game. But now you got Mitchell Trubisky. You got athletic quarterbacks that can take some carries off Najee with their athleticism. Different type of play structure with getting these guys out on boots, whether that's Trubisky or Kenny Pickett. And those guys can run as well. No, Najee, no. No 500, no. Don't say that no more.
Najee Harris, I mean, come on now. 500? I take that. I'm about drafting number one overall if I can get 500 opportunities from Najee Harris this season.
Y'all selfish.
You know, it's
y'all so selfish.
It's only the preseason, as you guys know, even though Swagoo is in regular season form. But should Cowboys fans be worried about their team's discipline?
Oh,
Marcus
boy.
Always has some thoughts on his Cowboys. Stick around to hear what he has.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Our first Week 2 NFL preseason game as the Bears taking on the Seahawks Thursday at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Steve Levy, Lewis Riddick, and Dan Orlovsky on the call. Laura Rutledge will be there on the field. Our coverage begins at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, with a special edition of Monday Night Countdown. All right. On to the Cowboys. They opened up their preseason schedule against the Broncos this past Saturday. They picked up, unfortunately, right where they left off last season as far as penalties are concerned. They committed 21 penalties in the loss. 17 of them were accepted. This coming after last season in which they led the entire NFL in penalties. Here's head coach Mike McCarthy on Dallas' struggles with the infractions.
I think we all recognize that this isn't the regular season. So, I understand, your question. And as far as, last year was last year. This is preseason. I don't think this has anything to do with last year. I didn't like the number of penalties. I made it clear. I talked about it at halftime and, talked about it briefly in there. So we'll take a long look at it.
Swaggy, what'd you make of Mike McCarthy's reaction?
Moment of silence for my reaction, y'all. Listen, man, I actually got a candle for my zen on this situation. Because yesterday we were going to get into this on the show and we ran out of time. And it's not about the penalties for me. It's about Mike McCarthy's reaction. Mike McCarthy, last year when we watched the Dallas Cowboys, you were penalty laden. There has been 206. You are the most penalized football team in the NFL in the last 2 years, I believe, or the last year. 266 of them. And you get 21 penalties in your first preseason game when after this season, that should have been the focus of you and your coaching staff. You've been practicing in training camp. You've had OTAs. You've probably had guys up there voluntarily, involuntarily practicing as well. You drafted an offensive lineman that came out of college with some penalty issues, who I think is going to be very good if he can get the holding penalties fixed in Tyler Smith. And you say it's only the preseason. No, it's not. It's about last year and the year before that. And the preseason showed us that where was the addressing of the penalties? You want the American public to believe and be okay with the most penalized team in the regular season last year to be okay with 21 penalties. I talked about it at halftime. I talked about it after that. We'll have to go look at it. It's the preseason. Brother, this ain't got a damn thing to do with the preseason. This is about the Dallas Cowboys being the most penalized team in football, and you shrug your shoulders at 21 penalties the first time we see you out in some simulated live action. I get it that starters wasn't out there. But Woody and Shefty, let me ask y'all a question, and I'm going to end this diatribe. Wasn't the damn starters out there last year when they got all them penalties?
Preseason doesn't count, but it matters.
Yeah. That's so true, it's become a cliche. It's a great expression.
Preseason doesn't count, but it matters.
Yeah.
And when you're coming off a season where you're the most penalized team in the National Football League. Because the one thing about penalties is a reflection of coaching.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a reflection of coaching, how you discipline your team. Is your team disciplined enough to go out there and execute without creating mental errors?
Yeah.
Because that's what penalties are. They're mental errors.
Yep. Especially the pre-snap stuff.
Absolutely. So this whole laissez-faire attitude by Mike McCarthy, oh, it's just preseason, oh, it's no big deal. Then next thing you know, in week four, same thing is happening. Week eight, it's all happening. And I think that's, to me, is the big problem here is when does it end?
Right.
When does it end?
Well, so if penalties are a reflection of coaching, we also know that the Cowboys' finish to last season was in many ways a reflection of coaching when they dialed up a play with insufficient time to get the field goal team back on the field. I know, Swaggu. It's why the rumors are already percolating about the possibility.
That's why I'm pissed.
I get it. I feel it. I can sense it.
Because last year, I stood on the hill and said, they going to get these things fixed. Me, Woody, and Shefty, and you, Babyface, was on shows last year. And you guys can attest that I was like, it ain't no way Mike McCarthy and this coaching staff going to let this trend continue throughout the season. And I ain't going to say it cost them because San Francisco deserved to win the game. But it damn sure didn't help that your season ended the way it did.
Sure.
After I'm standing on the table saying it ain't no way a professional football team, coaching staff, is going to allow them to cost them in January, potentially, or December, the things that's happening in September and October. And it damn well did.
I think one of the realities of the NFL, Shefty, is that in previous times, maybe we would talk about coaches and job security much closer to the end of the season. It's a different NFL, and I think that no coach enters a season under more pressure than Mike McCarthy. There's already been talk about Sean Payton, who conveniently happens to have roots in Dallas, is now retired from the NFL, although he has said he will go back to coaching at some point, he expects. How much job security does Mike McCarthy have or maybe not have?
Did you notice how Phil framed that whole thing? Mm. He has Sean Payton on the side. He has him. And then he asked me about his job security when he put it all out there.
Did you see how it happened?
Little baby face went total assassin right there.
I'll just read the scripts.
Boy, he set you up. He set you up, Chef.
let's put it out. Let's make sense of this, right? Let's basic facts. You said coaches are some of the most scrutinized jobs in the league.
Yep.
No coach is more scrutinized than the Dallas Cowboys head coaching job. Sean Payton, to your point, is out there. Whether Mike McCarthy likes it or not, every time there is a setback with the franchise, every time something goes wrong, every time a game is lost, every time the fans are upset, everybody's going to be calling for Sean Payton. That's a reality of the upcoming season, whether he likes it. It's just a part of his job. The irony is that they got hired the same year. Mike McCarthy to Green Bay, Sean Payton to New Orleans were part of the same rookie coaching class, got their head coaching jobs in the same class. And now the shadow of Sean Payton, for better or worse, hangs over the job that Mike McCarthy does in Dallas. It's just the way it is.
It sort of reminds me of when a team has a young quarterback on the roster that fans want to see, but the veteran still has a starting job, and the only way for the veteran to keep that job is to just keep winning. That's the only way to quiet the chatter about something like Sean Payton.
And when Babyface is going after the head coach while asking a question, you know that he's got real issues this upcoming season.
I'm just saying. We'll see what happens with the Cowboys. They have lost 11 straight postseason games prior to making the conference championship. That's longest by any team since at least 1970. Hey, fantasy football season's around the corner. Stick around to find out which players impact both fantasy and reality. New on NFL Live, we have a development in Pittsburgh. Shefty, what can you tell us?
Well, Phil, for the first time today during practice, Steelers' first-round draft pick, Kenny Pickett, took some reps with the starting offense in the two-minute drill. Mm-hmm. He had not taken any reps with the first-team offense until today. Again, it was just in the two-minute drill, but it happened today for the first time. Make of that what you will, Damian Woody.
Listen, I'm telling you right now, Mitchell Trubisky better be careful, because if you're taking reps in a two-minute drill, that's the hardest thing to operate.
You're calling
your own plays, your own shots, going up against the defense. If you can operate a two-minute drill and do it successfully, it's only a matter of time.
What do you say, Swagoo?
You know what? It lends itself to – we talked about this a little bit yesterday with Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin is going to play the guy that he thinks is the best. This contract that Mitchell Trubisky signed, the time that Mitchell Trubisky has been in the NFL, it may be a factor, but it's not going to be a factor enough if Kenny Pickett clearly wins this job throughout training camp for Mike Tomlin to go with him. We're talking about a dude that has 15 winning seasons in Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
He is going to exhaust every possibility to win football games and put the best guy behind center. And it also plays into what we talked about leading into the draft with Kenny Pickett. The reps that he took at Pitt, the familiarity with that organization and being around every day, those type of things are weighing in on this decision that's going to be made. But this is a true quarterback competition. And to Woody's point, even from a defensive standpoint, the two-minute drill is reserved for the guy that's going to be in the game in crunch time situations. And I get it that it's preseason, but it matters. And it matters because you are not talking about a quarterback with a lot of time on the field in Mitchell Trubisky that just has this overall arching resume to put him so far ahead of Kenny Pickett, who they drafted. And based on Kenny Pickett's play in that first preseason game, this is a result of that. And then you start to see things progress. This is big. This ain't something small. It may be a rookie starting in Pittsburgh, fellas.
Swaggle, you and I both know this. I always say, if they're even, he's leaving.
He's leaving.
That's the way it is. With these young quarterbacks, especially drafting the first round, I'm telling you.
Well, look, all we have to do is look back over the past few days of what's happened with Kenny Pickett. In the preseason game, he goes 13 of 15 and creates basically this huge buzz in the city of Pittsburgh that already was there. Now, a few days later, he's taking reps with the starting offense in the two-minute drill. Yep. So at the very least, he has closed the gap with Mitchell Trubisky. Mm-hmm. He has laid a stake and a claim for that starting job. And basically, if Trubisky is starting the season, just like we're talking about Sean Payton over Mike McCarthy, we're talking about Kenny Pickett with Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, well, by the way, just I think of this as like the window just opening a little bit. And around this time last year, Cam Newton had to miss five days of practice with the Patriots. And what happened? Mac Jones carved the Giants defense up. He became the Patriots starter. He may be the Patriots starter for the next dozen years. Not saying we're quite at that point with Kenny Pickett, but sometimes all it takes is just one little opening, crack of the window for a rookie to take over a job and make it his own. Good stuff there. Coming up on NFL Live, we're going to get a live report from Green Bay on the joint practice between the Packers and the Saints. Eyes may be on the new wide receivers in Green Bay. Woody says we should be looking elsewhere. But the sun keeps on shining. Breaking news into NFL Live. It involves Jets quarterback Zach Wilson. Shefty, what can you tell us?
Phil, he underwent knee surgery today. It was the best case scenario for the Jets. They initially had said 2 to 4 weeks, but it certainly sounds like Joe Flacco is in line to start with the Ravens. And the Jets are going to be very careful with Zach Wilson and not bring him back until he is 100% fully recovered from the knee surgery that he had today in Los Angeles with Dr. Neil Eletrush.
And by the way, his teammate Mekhi Becton also officially out for the year.
Yeah, he's going to have surgery later this week in Los Angeles with the same doctor. By the way, surgery has not happened yet, but he was placed on IR. His season officially over.
The Jets officially added Dwayne Brown yesterday, so the team now has this new left tackle and right tackle combo with George Fant moving over to the right side. We go from the Jets to more joint practices as the Packers are playing host to the New Orleans Saints. These two teams met all the way back in week one of last regular season. The game was played in Jacksonville. Good to see these two teams that have plenty of defense and plenty of new faces amongst wide receivers on offense this offseason. And time now for us to bring in the great Rob Domofsky, who covers the Packers for us here at ESPN. And Rob, sound like a good day out there in Green Bay. What'd you see on the field?
Well, it wasn't that great of a day for the receivers field. In fact, if the expiration date on Aaron Rodgers' patience with the young receivers was August 16th, well, he's reached it. They've expired. He expressed frustration with the group for the first time, really, since they lost Davante Adams in free agency. Now, he's not frustrated with Alan Lazard, who he thinks can be a legitimate number one. He's not frustrated with Randall Cobb, who he called one of the premier slot receivers in the NFL, and not with Sammy Watkins either, who he said had his best practice today against the Saints. But after watching mistakes and routes and drops cost Jordan Love 3 interceptions in the preseason game against San Francisco and then another sloppy practice today, Rodgers said that those young receivers have got to become more consistent. I asked him, when does inconsistency have to turn into production? And he said, well, it's now. The time is now. It's coming. Giving the obvious answer that they're running out of time before the opener. Now, they will get some reinforcements back in the passing game. Christian Watson, their top draft pick, the second round pick, and Robert Tonyan, their tight end, have both come off PUP. Now, none of them did anything in the team stuff against the Saints today. They're just doing individual drills. But the fact that they're back here in practice and doing some individual stuff and some jog-through stuff field at least gives Rodgers a couple of more weapons before they get to that season opener at Minnesota.
All right, there you have it. The latest on the Packers pass catchers from Rob Domofsky. Thank you so much for joining us here, Rob. Another day of joint practices coming up tomorrow. There's been plenty of talk about how Green Bay's offense will look without Davante Adams this season, but one thing seems certain. Aaron Rodgers' success could be defined by his protection up front. Last season, Rodgers ranked top 3 in QBR, completion percentage, and yards per attempt when kept clean. But when he was pressured, He ranks at the bottom of the league in all of those same areas. So Damon is our resident offensive lineman. Both Packers' offensive tackles are coming off of injuries. David Bakhtiari still on PUP. How concerned are you about this Packers offensive line right now?
I'm concerned. I mean, listen, we just looked at the stats on the graphic right there.
Yeah.
When he, you know, and this is the case with any quarterback, really, but obviously with Aaron Rodgers, he's greatly.
That was a stark difference.
Oh, there's no question about it. He's greatly, you know, affected with that pressure. You're talking about both starting tackles that are coming back from major surgery. As much as we talk about the rookie wide receivers and obviously the tandem in the backfield, with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones, if you don't have the protection, don't have the guys on the edges to give Aaron Rodgers a clean pocket to survey those guys, what does it matter? None of it matters. So to me, when I look at the Green Bay Packers, that's what I got my eye on.
Yeah, it's almost in the same vein of how we talk about New England with the benefit of the doubt with Bill Belichick. But this is live action, and when you're on that field, your protection predicates how good you are at quarterback, obviously, by the graphic that we showed. But the thing that I really focus on and what Rob Demofsky is coming off of is the rapport with receivers help you get the ball out of your hands quicker. And the one thing I think receivers have to understand, and a couple guys that's been around, Lazard and obviously Randall Cobb and getting Tonyan back, is that Aaron Rodgers is going to make throws that other quarterbacks in the NFL can't make. He's going to take chances in tightrope throws that other guys just aren't able to do. It's a couple, Herbert and obviously Patrick Mahomes. But ultimately, getting on the same page with these guys is a part of your offensive line as well, being able to protect and maybe needing a little bit more time to push the ball downfield because you don't have that rapport built. It'll be interesting to watch, man. This is not a great combination when you're trying to break in receivers, especially trying to find a number one guy after what you lose with Devontae Adams, but also worrying about protection and time that you have to throw the football. Remember this, fellas. Aaron Rodgers is going to throw the ball sometimes, and we are going to be like, what is happening? You got to have receivers that understand that as well, and you need time to do that.
Well, when Rob said he's frustrated with young receivers.
Yeah.
Christian Watson's just back at practice.
Right.
Romeo Dobbs.
He didn't name him, but he unofficially named him, right? Like, that's who you took it to be.
Right.
Now, he's been sensational during training camp, and I would think that any young receiver is going to have ups and downs. And so this seemed like a down day, I guess, for him after a weekend in which he caught a long pass, also dropped a ball or two. So, again, ups and downs, I think that's par for the course for the young receivers, and that's why this team is going to have to lean on running the football, short passes, Robert Tonyan getting him back at tight end, hopefully, and having him back for the start of the season, throwing to the two backs out of the backfield, doing other things that are a little bit different than they've done in the past.
But you know what? That's the expectation. When you expect it to win now, you know, Aaron Rodgers talked about, like, guys, we don't have time to waste. Like, literally, week one is coming.
Yeah.
You know, if this is a rebuilding team, it's one thing, but when you're expected to contend for a championship, it's almost like we don't have time to wait for you. You guys got to figure it out right now.
And they certainly don't want a repeat of last year's week one, 38-3 against the New Orleans Saints. The game was being played in Jacksonville, of course. Because
you just chose violence.
I couldn't help myself. Second time on the show today, Dan. I'm feisty today. Hey, time now for one more thing. And Aaron Rodgers may not have trust with his young wide receivers, at least entirely, but he does have a Nick Cage bust in his locker. And, Damian, that to me feels like reason enough to believe he could be the back-to-back-to-back MVP this year.
Yeah, man, his swag is just on a trillion right now. Like, I mean, to have a Nick Cage bust in your locker, who does that?
Yeah, hey, Swagger, did you ever carry anything weird in your locker during your playing days?
Nah, nothing weird at all. Picture of my family, but I wasn't good enough to put no foolishness.
Your first round pick, come on now, Swagoo.
That don't mean you're good enough.
You had a big old bag when you entered the league. As far as I'm concerned, you could have had whatever you wanted in your locker. NFL Live continues tomorrow. Watch the Fantasy Football Marathon tonight.